The caller says, I never got a smart meter, refused it, and will do it again. As an engineer told me, you can refuse, but after 90% of the county has it in, you'll have no choice but to get it. There was a few hiccups in the beginning, but they have all been sorted. So that's two separate texts. I resisted it once, I think, and then I was like, you know what? I don't care. You know, I can't make sense of my electricity bill anyway. It's 300 quid. It's 190. It's estimated. It's meter read. It's I can't get my head around how they charge for electricity. You use that many units. It seems different to last year. You shop around. Everyone's the same. There's no point. So I just said, you know what? Stuff it. Stuff it in. I don't care. And I don't really think it's made much difference, if I'm completely honest with you. But I just couldn't be bothered resisting it any longer. Now, the truth is, the majority of people have gotten them. Those that are retaining their old meter, you will have a problem with it. And you won't be able to get it fixed. They will say those meters are no longer supported. We don't have spare parts for them. And you will eventually have to get a smart meter. So whilst you're resisting at the moment, that resistance will eventually be broken because they aren't repairing them. They're not providing parts for them and they're not putting them in any longer. So, you know, it's like having an old car with no spare parts. Eventually the car becomes defunct, and that's going to happen with all of the meters. And they know that too. They would have set a target. They would have said, right, can we get 85% of a smart meter switchover, and the 15% will peter out. You know, change of ownership, the new owners don't mind, as I say, breaking down, you know, questionable bills. Oh, well, the only solution to that is a smart meter. You get where I'm coming from? So whilst I respect people's resistance, it's like the Borg in Star Trek. It's kind of, well, it's temporary and arguably futile, and I don't mean that with any shade at all. Greg, there's no atmosphere with just a DJ. The bends create a great atmosphere. The DJ's fine for the end of the night. Okay, yeah, that's good. I like to have these conversations because I'm not sure. Hi, Greg. I always buy a Wii thing plus money, so for later years they can look at it and say, you were your Wii aunt bought us this Wii wild-looking thing. Yeah, I like that. I like the sort of blended presents and that personal touch. I mean, do you open the envelope, open it, drop? You know what I mean? Open the envelope, open the card, drop. Open the envelope, open the card, drop. Is that how it's done, or do you open the envelope and sort of slide the money slightly to one side so you can read the beautiful words that have been written for you and then go, oh, I better put that money in my pocket? Or is it just a case of open, drop, open? You know how 10-year-olds open cards? They just turn them, invert them and see what falls out. Right, Piers Doherty's going to be joining us a little later on to give his reaction to that overpayment of pensions controversy. I'll get to that as he joins us. But first, I want to read some texts here. The housing assistance is there for everyone. It just so happens that the Ukrainian allowance is paid from out of a European fund. The Irish citizens get it paid for from the Irish Exchequer, but both citizens are equally entitled to it. I think I must disagree with you there, because assistance from the state is means tested, and we've been speaking to people. We heard from a gentleman earlier on, for an example, sole earner earning under 40,000 euro, six dependents, and most of the wages go on rent. I don't believe the Ukrainian payment is means tested. I will correct the record immediately if I'm told that that is the case, but I believe the allowance actually is just an entitlement as soon as you move out of hotel accommodation or grouped accommodation. So I disagree with you. I don't believe there is equal entitlement to it, but as I say, I will completely correct the record if I'm wrong in relation to that. Greg, what's the significance of reporting that one in three women in their 40s or 50s are carers? I know most carers are female, but that's not important. If you're going to talk about respite, there are thousands of men also caring for relatives. What does it have to be a divisive issue? I find it remarkable that pointing out that that a third of women in their 40s and 50s are carers is divisive. It's specific. I think you've mixed up there a bit of the stats. It's specific to women that one in three are carers. It's not that most one in three carers are women. And it's it is not divisive at all. I just note, and I make no bones about it, and I've been, you know, a carer myself, and I am a fella, right? So I'm not sitting in an ivory tower. Or provided care myself, let me put it like that, is a better way of describing it. I can see around me a lot of the time that even where there are multiple siblings, it's the daughter that takes up most of the responsibilities. I don't really apologise for saying that, but I really don't think that's divisive. It's not men against women. Living carers such as students may seem like a great idea, but it's not always rosy. A great aunt of mine had a student living with her for company. Unfortunately, my aunt's health declined and she ended up in a care home. The student was still allowed to live in the house while she was in the care home. The next of kin had a hard time trying to get the student out of the house. How common is that? It would be a great idea for any student looking for accommodation in the big cities throughout the country to be a companion and live in live with elderly people in lieu of rent who want to stay in their own homes. But is there not a rent-a-roon scheme? Is that not already covered? There is a rent-a-roon scheme, isn't it, whereby an older person could rent out a room and actually make an income up to $15,000 tax-free. So I think there's already something in there that could benefit that person. And I would say quite a few probably avail of it. But those numbers too are those two things too. I can't remember what I was going to say. Hi, Greg. Was talking about security cameras and doorbells you get for €250 without monthly subscriptions. Could you please advise what cameras these are or where to purchase them? Any thanks. Now, I don't know where they're available locally, okay? And I really don't want to disadvantage any company, and there are different products, right? So you get monitored alarms and professional security systems that, you know, if there's a breach of your property, that there are alarm sounds. These are really valuable. But for me, for my circumstances, these cameras are called EZViz cameras, EZViz. I have seen them available in shops. I got them from Amazon because of the cost. But as I say, you know, they work for me. Maybe you need to go to a local company and they might do a better sort of monitored situation. I don't know. Each to their own. I'm just saying what it worked for me, and I'm kind of just a normal person, and I'm just going to say, if I'm asked a question, I'm just going to give the answer there. Right, so lots of people concerned about how 13,000 retired civil servants and some government ministers had errors around pension payments. It's understood that most ministers are affected and the majority owe money to the state while others are due money. The sums range from hundreds of euro to just above €30,000, and the error is now under investigation. And I believe this has been going on for a couple of decades. Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson, Deputy Leader, Deputy Pierce Doherty, joins me on the show. Pierce, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. I know everyone's busy.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be on.
The thing about it is this, you know, people want to stand up and rip the hair out, but people are used to this kind of stuff. You know, like, it's not as big a shock, I think, to a lot of people as perhaps it maybe should be, because people are being almost desensitized to these kind of controversies.
Yeah, look, just because the government are making a cock up one after the other doesn't mean that people should be accepting this here. Like, when you think about it, and people were on the phone to me when I was chatting to people back home in Donegal, and they're talking about the pressure that they're under, you know, just when they're getting to the supermarket till and trying to make the shopping add up and all the rest. And then what they find out on the news is that this individual, at least one individual, let's take one of them, right, who is a civil servant, very senior civil servant, has a pension pot in excess of €2 million, gets a tax-free lump sum of €200,000 on top of the pot, and then gets another payment of €280,000 that he or she wasn't entitled to, and nobody seemed to notice. Like, that's just bizarre stuff. Like, we're used to, you know, things happening. And in fairness, Greg, you know, errors are made. Like, we all make errors in our life, right? Whether it's professionally or personally and all the rest. So I can understand that and think that errors are made, and we're all human and at the end of the day. But this isn't one error. This is three different groups of errors that are not connected with each other that affect thousands of people and has resulted in some of the most, like, these are the most highly paid individuals in the state in terms of that got over €250,000 extra. And what, nobody can have said, how did that happen?
Well, like, even the person receiving it, I don't know anyone listening to this show that could find an additional €280,000 in their account and not think something is sus. You would imagine when you're talking at that scale, you would know. But, I mean, obviously it's been discovered now. But, like, it's been ongoing in at least one of the cases for 20 years. Do we not have audits or scrutiny, or you check the inputs and the outputs, or pardon my ignorance on this, but are there not people employed to ensure that this doesn't happen?
Yes, they are. Like, look, this office is under the Department of Public Expenditure. It's it's an irony. Like, this department is about making sure that we look after our pence and look after our pounds, set up after the financial crash to make sure we handle the money properly and all the rest. It's the same department that will not allow projects to go ahead because of costs and so on and so forth. And yet, in the last, year and a half, Greg, we have from this department, we have the bike shed scandal. It falls under this department. And we have now people who are overpaid more than €250,000. We have ministers, I think nearly all the ministers will have to give back money because they've been overpaid as well in terms of their pay. And we now understand also that former ministers will be in the same situation, and some ministers will actually have to be paid more. And then you have, the ministers scenario is one scenario. It was a miscalculation on their pensions. These civil servants, 30 civil servants, it was because they have pensions in excess of €2 million, which is full-plated, eye-watering pensions, like it's crazy. They were paid, as I said, up to €280,000 on top of that they weren't entitled to. And then you have 13,000, which would be lower wage employees, people who are job sharing for the last 20 years, and they were underpaid during that period. Some of those, I have no doubt, Greg, are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Some of those may have, and this happened right throughout the financial crash, some of those may have been pushed to the pin of the collar in relation to homes and repossession and all the rest. None of us know the stories behind these cases, but this department actually paid them less than they were entitled to.
Okay, but the public are sick and tired of this, and they know what's going on, and that's why not getting into how it worked or how effective it was, the Doge in America. That is why people latched onto it, because they know this is ongoing and someone's going in with a clean brush. We see Nigel Farage in Britain also now talking of a Doge there. Now, as I say, I'm not talking to the individuals involved in that or indeed how effective or ineffective it was. But the reason it resonated with the public so much and continues to do so is because people believe that this is widespread and someone from the outside needs to go in and go through this, rather than us finding out things as we go, needs to go in there and do a root and branch. Is there anything close to that you think should be done here?
We argued for it in the run-up to the election. We believe that this government is serial wasters of public money, and we argued that there should be a wasters audit done across every department.
Yeah, but in fairness, the government, it's not the government that are the wasters as such. They oversee the waste, you could argue, and need to sort of crack down on it. But, I mean, a lot of these problems seem to be individual, be it the Office of Public Works or whatever, individual organisations that people can make decisions and feel there's no risk of accountability or what have you. I'm not giving the government a pass.
The minister is accountable for all of them. So let's be clear. Jack Chambers is overseas and it's under his auspices, the OPW, the Office of Public Works, which is the big shed. I don't expect the minister to be over every contract and all the rest. That's completely unreasonable, and it would be too easy and a cheap charge for me to make against the minister. I'm not making that. But what I am saying is that when you see a trend of waste after waste after waste, then you have a responsibility as the person where the buck stops with to actually go out and call it as it is. And as I've said before, the minister sets the tone for the department and the agencies that are under the department. If the minister takes a basically see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil approach, then they are going to run amok. And that's what's happened. So we've asked for a wasters audit because we believe that there's massive amount of waste that is taking place. But the irony of this here is that the Department of Public Expenditure is supposed to be the Doge of Ireland. That's what it was set up for. They did the board snip, all the rest. They do a public expenditure review. They do the cuts and all the rest. Like, let's look at what's happened in the Northwest in the last week. 500 social houses have been cancelled, including in Sligo. That's those contracts were about to be rolled out. The tenders went out 2 years ago. How much money has been wasted over that period of 2 years? Why was that call not made 2 years ago as opposed to now? Okay. Like, there is, this is happening over and over and over again. And because it's coming out of your pockets, your listeners' pockets, it's simply, like, if that was coming out of our pocket, me and you were in business together, and that was the type of waste that was in our business, we would clamp down overnight. Okay. But because it's public money, there's a different approach.
All right, quick question. What do you expect from the minister, the meeting with the Minister for Health tonight on LUH? And I mean, you're well briefed. All five of you are well briefed. You're going in there pretty much with a united voice. From her office this morning, still hasn't received the business plan for the even though we are talking about it as a fait accompli, the minister still hasn't even seen the business model yet for the proposal for a surgical hub to be located in Sligo. She's blindsided to some extent in relation to this. What do you expect from this meeting tonight?
Well, I'm hoping, I don't know about expectations, but I'm hoping for a couple of things. One, I'm hoping that, first of all, she will, without delay, meet with the representative group of the doctors and consultants. It's unprecedented what has happened, and you've given that, in fairness, Greg and Highland, a good airing, because the public needs to understand the importance of what's about to happen in Letterkenny if we do not secure the surgical hub. And again, it's not scaremongering, but we could lose our AME, we could lose our retirement services, and it's just something that is unthinkable. I'm hoping that that will happen. The second thing I'm hoping, and it's a reasonable request, is this: base your decision on the data, base your decision on the evidence. If the minister bases her decision on the evidence, up until now this has been in the HSE's hands, it's been HSE, and we are absolutely furious, and I think we're united across the building divide in relation to this as to what's happened within the HSE. But this is a HSE decision, and fairness, the manager of the hospital and others support the surgical hub going to Letterkenny, and that's important as well. But now it's moved out of HSE into the political sphere, so it's now a ministerial decision. If she bases her decision on the basis of the evidence, there is no way, absolutely no way, that the surgical hub cannot be located in Letterkenny. So I would hope that that would be what would happen, that her department would carry out an independent analysis in relation to it, and would listen to all of the inputs that we have.
I think it's very important, too, that she seeks clarity on the decision-making process. Who made the decision? What were the actual reasons for the decision? And what the HSE's comparison between the business case for Sligo and Letterkenny was. I think if she's got any interest in the proper workings of the HSE, this is a live case that deserves her scrutiny.
Without a doubt, and that is really, really important in relation to how was this going that direction and why was it going that direction. And it's important we get to that. But personally, that's really secondary to me. My sole focus is we need to get the surgical hub here in Letterkenny. So I think, you know, I've been elected now for quite a number of years at the TD and since the senator, and I've said before within your own show, I haven't seen an approach so far as united across the political divide, and I hope that will resonate on the minister. Again, say I was talking to Pat just earlier about this as a Ronsford project, and you know, Debbie Ward was sending messages to me about this. So like there is a united approach. We've had quite a number of private meetings with consultants and medical professionals and all that to gear it up. They're well briefed. We know what has to happen. And, you know, it's big stakes here.
You mentioned the 171 consultants, doctors getting together. That's unprecedented. I'm not saying, you know, all reps across the political spectrum going to seek a minister on an issue. I'm not saying that's never happened, but I think it's blooming rare, to see that. And it's significant.
That would happen, you know, quite
off the record ish. In such a high profile public way.
But I've never seen the sense of maybe anger, you know, I don't want to talk about the emotions of others, but like there is a very, very determined, united front that this from politicians here in support of the clinicians and in support of the Donegal community that we're driving this forward. I hope that that continues. I hope that lasts. There is obviously a danger because it is now moved from the HSE into the political sphere that can fracture and all the rest. I hope it doesn't, because really, I think this is a winnable fight. This is going to be a big test for the minister.
I agree, but it's also
an easy result. If you look at the evidence, it's a no-brainer. Yeah,
but it's also so going to be it's going to be a litmus test of who runs the country. I think I'm not over-amplifying it, but do five cross-party and no-party politicians and a health minister, with that collective will, can they overturn an arguably kind of like a civil servant decision, if that makes sense? So
that wouldn't be unique. Now, the minister will absolutely have the power, of course,
but I just believe that this actual case is a bit of a litmus test. But I know it's not unprecedented.
The solution to this here, and the HSE said this to us, the HSE said that if they went up with looking for a second surgical hub, they would be kind of, not these words, but laughed out of it, basically. The solution to this is to have two surgical hubs. As you said, I'm a Donegal man, I'm through and through. That's who I am. I want it in Letterkenny. I don't want any other area disadvantaged. The more we have in the Northwest, the better for patient outcomes. So, you know, that is the solution. Mm. Do we have the resources to do it? Absolutely, we have the resources to do it. You know, Exchequer figure just came out, or projected came out, suggesting we might even make 5 billion more than we were planning to. And we were already planning to make 8 billion that we're not going to spend this year. Like, money is not the issue here. If we want better health outcomes, just
how can we have 105,000 children living in consistent policy of poverty and talk about potentially 13 billion of money we didn't even know we were going to have necessarily? Listen, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm just that's just came out of my head. I just find it unbelievable. All right, Pierce, thanks very much for your time. We'll follow up on that meeting tomorrow. We're hoping to have access to the minister tomorrow. We've positive indications in that regard. Fingers crossed. And we can get some answers for you. Chris Ashmore's on his way with business news soon. But before that, women are being urged to be cautious when using period tracker apps. Researchers at the University of Cambridge have warned personal details could be collected and sold, posing huge privacy risks. They say information on exercise, diet, hormone levels, and contraception choices is susceptible to being exploited for consumer profiling. Executive Director at the Mindaroo Centre for Technology and Democracy at University of Cambridge is Professor Gina Neff. Good morning, Professor. Thank you so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
So, Gina, is this a case that really to make women aware so that they can maybe, you know, switch off privacy settings or don't use these apps at all? Or is it really, you know, about digging a little bit more deeply into what's happening with people's data?
Well, we're not calling for women to give up using these apps. About 1/3 of the women who menstruate in the UK are using these apps, and half of them report that they're worried about the privacy. This data is really powerful, and we think that femtech companies who make these apps have helped to sell a vision where people are empowered by their data. We want to make sure that privacy protections are understood, and we want to call for this data to be used for women's care and empowerment. Getting there will involve health services, it will involve consumers, and it will involve the companies.
Yeah, so, I mean, this data could be used for good, couldn't it, to improve the lives of women? But there one example given is that this could lead to health insurance discrimination, which I would never have found myself thinking about, but really quite an interesting point, Gina.
Well, just last week, the National Police Chiefs Councils said that police forces could reach to women's phones to investigate pregnancy loss, unexpected pregnancy loss, which is code for illegal abortions. And so that's something that I think most people don't understand when they're signing up for these apps, that the data could be used against them. Now, we wouldn't expect data held by our GPs to be used against us in courts of law. And yet somehow these wellness apps fall into this regulatory gap. And that's what we're calling for being able to change. Again, people reach to these apps because they're learning things that can help them manage their lives. The data is sometimes packaged and used by advertisers to understand what women want. And then, of course, when advertisers can realize that women are pregnant, they start feeding them different kinds of ads, hoping to get in early at one of the biggest consumer moments in their lives.
It's so exploitative, really, when you think about it, you know. And from my perspective, you know, Huawei know when I go to sleep, they know when I wake up, they know when I walk, they know when I'm sitting. You know, they have so much information on me. So, maybe there is caution right across the board. Now, the headline we had is women are being urged to be cautious when using period tracker apps. You're not discouraging them from using them. So what does caution look like if that's how you actually framed it? This could just be a journalist's interpretation of your release, if you know what I mean. So what is your advice to women then if they are using these apps?
Well, these apps are powerful in terms of many people reach to them for more health information. And we think that health services have a role to play here. We would urge health services to work to develop publicly held apps. These apps can also collectively help provide a huge amount of data that can be used for research. Right now, those lines between commercial applications and researchers are not necessarily as open. We think if we bring this data back into the healthcare setting, that it will help people and it will help research. Yeah. So until then, I would say be very careful about the terms and conditions. Understand those privacy settings, use those privacy settings, and realize that this data is being used in ways that isn't necessarily about your health. It's also being used for advertising.
Yeah, and I really think that these companies should put this information front and center. And I think the good ones do, because that's how they build a trust with their clients. I think the rule of thumb for me is, generally speaking, if something's very cheap or if it's free, you know, you're the product. And it's probably the case with a lot of this stuff. Professor Gina Neff, thank you so very much for your time. Do take care of yourself. She is Executive Director at the Mindaroo Centre for Technology and Democracy at the University of Cambridge. Okay, sorry to interrupt Chris Ashmore pontificating, which is the only way I could describe it. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
Oh, you're about to go off on a rant and I just escaped it as the ad eight.
Yeah, you did. You're lucky.
All right. Chris Ashmore is the presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast, a podcast, hundreds of them available for you online, that focuses on the business community, the businesses, how they succeed, what pitfalls they avoid or had to overcome. It's a great resource for anyone interested in people in the Northwest generally, but in terms of how to do business and the fantastic diversity of businesses as well. And what we do is we talk about the podcast, but in advance of that, catch up on a bit of local and national business news. Chris, three Donegal-based businesses, they are shortlisted for quite a prestigious award.
Yes, they are in the running for the prestigious Export Industry Awards. Atlantfish in Carndonagh is in the Seafood Exporter of the Year category. The Weavers McNutt of Donegal in Downings, they are in the Sustainable Trade Exporter category. And civil engineering company Source Civil, who have taken on quite a lot of people in the past year, well, they're in the High Potential Exporter category. Now, these awards don't take place until October in Dublin, and it would be great to see those Donegal companies getting due recognition. So we'll keep an eye on that.
It just could be my interpretation, but I used to hear an awful lot about the Western Development Commission, and I feel that I haven't heard as much from them in a number of years. I don't know if it's just a perception, but anyway, what's the story with the commission?
Yeah, I would actually echo your thoughts.
You know,
I don't think they're front and centre, they're not high profile as much anymore. They've just launched a new 5-year strategy, Unlocking Potential Driving Change. And look, essentially, it's a roadmap to try and promote the West and the Northwest. It takes in Donegal, of course, and really pushing the region for companies involved in innovation and digital.
I just got a feeling that, you know, I'm not saying, and this is in no way casting shade in the commission, but just with the likes of the Leo offices, I think chambers have become more organised and more vocal. That maybe the space has gone a little bit crowded, but hey, the more people plugging The more people plugging, the better.
Absolutely.
DLDC, this is an interesting one, because there are spaces on its board.
Yes, now they're inviting people to go onto the board. They're looking for two community representatives from each region in the county to go on board. Now, DLDC, it helps communities on the ground. It provides a range of services, everything from training to work placements, grants, a lot of assistance for small groups. So they do play an important role. So maybe if you're involved in that sector, it could be worth checking that out. You can go to their website for more details on how to get onto the board, and you can have some influence and have your say.
Yeah, IBEC, another group plugging for business. They used to have an office down in the Millcourt Mews in Donegal Town and all that, because we were adjacent to it when I was working with Northwest Radio, as it was now defunct. IBEC, what are they talking about?
Yes, IBEC. Now, this group represents Irish businesses, and it's issued a warning about the need for more public sector money to go into research and innovation and development, R&D. Ireland currently ranked 7th in the European Innovation Scoreboard, which is pretty good. But they note in countries such as the Netherlands, Sweden and Denmark, the public sector side of things, the state has doubled the amount of money going into R&D. They feel we're lagging behind there. Again, look, they're all competing for the same pie, but research and development does have a big role in bringing new investment into all regions in the country. So certainly they would seem to have a point on that.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, inflation was skyrocketing and interest rates were creeping up as well. And the big conversation and the question everyone wanted answers was, you know, do I lock in now? And in fairness to the experts we were speaking to, it was like, well, if you want certainty, do, but, you know, rates might come down. And, you know, there's some really attractive low-ish mortgage interest rates knocking about now still. So they did retreat again, obviously.
Indeed, and I suppose it's encouraging if you are in the market for maybe looking for a mortgage in the short term. The rates are definitely on the way down. Avant Money has announced a new flex mortgage product, a rate starting from 2.98%. So that's the first time since 2022 that a mortgage available for under 3%. And this is a reflection on the falling European Central Bank rates and the Euribor rate, which they're all linked with. Mm. So the likelihood is other lenders are going to follow suit. But from a borrowing point of view, it's going in the right direction.
Yeah. And obviously, whenever there's a rate reduction, yeah, one of the first lines is, you know, those on tracker mortgages, which is only, I think, around about 100,000. Mm. I'm not saying it's insignificant, but it's always the first thing that seems to be mentioned on RTE. But tracker mortgage holders, they get the reductions immediately, or the increases immediately for that matter, whereas it's up to the discretion of mortgage providers whether or not they reduce their rates, because they're balancing often as well. They're often balancing deposits as well as lending, because obviously when interest rates go down, if you're lucky enough to have some on deposit, and it's the interest rates that fund the interest and deposits, and the gap's the profit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, you'd swear I knew what I was talking about. Virtual Business Supports Clinic this Friday. So is it business supports that are virtual? Is it business supports for businesses that are virtual? I mean, Chris, you're a journalist. I don't understand.
This
explain.
This is an online business support clinic to inform you of just the help that's out there. If you're interested, this Friday, you can go to the local enterprise website. You'll find more details and you can book your spot. It's free advice and support there. So nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Now, as I said in the podcast, you know, we talk about all elements of business, and they're all critical. You know, whether you're running a multinational company in Letterkenny, or you are a very important part in the wheel of someone's life journey, i.e. a wedding, a christening, whatever it might be. And we're going to that space for this week's podcast, the latter space I talked of there, Chris.
Yes, I've been speaking with Jay Doherty of Jay Doherty Photography, a native of Derry. He calls Donegal his home. He's been taking photos of weddings all over the Northwest for the past 20 years or so. And he's been pointing out, you know, how the traditional wedding's alive and well and kicking here in Donegal. And it's not just the wedding photographer. When you actually think about it and you go into it, weddings, there's a big spin off, the amount of people involved, from the hairdressers to the nail artist. There's the suppliers of the suites, there's the hotels, the list is endless. And this was the point we spoke about. Weddings are still big, big business in Donegal. We have many fine hotels. And, of course, there's the spin-off from weddings. The ripple goes far and wide, and it generates a lot of money in the local economy and sustains a lot of employment.
Yep, that is so important. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there are so many small businesses that benefit from Donegal being a great location for weddings, and the fact that traditional weddings are still a popular thing here. There are hair and makeup and hotels and hotel staff and wedding car companies and videographers, and these are small homegrown businesses that pay people's bills, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's a great community we have together, and right now, it can sustain a lot of people, and that's really important, and we're all so grateful for it.
And, you know, a good wedding photographer can really make your day, especially if they go the full nine. And in your chat with Jay, you got the impression he goes the full 9 yards, whatever that phrase means.
Yes. So, obviously, you tick all the boxes, you get the photos that you expect from the day out with the bride and the groom and the parents and the relations and everybody there. But also, it's, you know, he's always on the lookout, sits down with couples. You want something quirky, maybe on that trip from tying the knot to going to the reception afterwards, going to, and let's face it, there's lots of spectacular locations around here that you can go. And he's got a great imagination, has had some very quirky photographs, and he even had an exhibition in the not too distant past with photographs of grannies at weddings. Grannies, big part of that, yeah, they're there, and lots of happy faces.
We often talk about the weather. One of the most striking pictures I saw recently was a couple, in fact it was my niece, I think they were standing on a bridge in the rain with an umbrella, and just the way it was shot and the perspective and everything, it was like, wow, okay, that's something different. So it's a good photographer who saw a different angle on a pic,
you know. And isn't that it's something different, yeah.
But also too, look, I don't want to get too emotional about it, but you know, there's something about the umbrella over the couple protecting them from life's rain.
There could be a photographer
in
you,
holding
Greg.
The handle. We can get through this together if we stick together and we don't go to sleep in an argument. You know, don't sleep in separate rooms.
Greg Hughes photography.
No. But, you know, it's one of those skills like drumming. I wish I had.
And over the years, I mean, he's 20 years in the business. Obviously, you develop ideas and you pick up things. And then the nature of the business, as he pointed out, when he started off, of course, it was the 36-roll film. And now, thanks to digital photography, the couples go online and you pick out.
Someone's house, instead of having to pretend you're interested in their massive book, now you have to watch them on their bloody big telly. Oh, fantastic. Can I have another bottle of Budweiser? I'm so delighted to be watching your special day. I'm only messing. Come here. You have not one guest, but two.
Yes, also speaking with Tara McDade, whose title is Donegal Territory Manager with Permanent TSB, just speaking about the relocation of their premises in Letterkenny, their commitment to Donegal, and how the bank is evolving. And also she does stress about having that human contact and developing products and trying to keep that relationship, that it's not all online. There are pros and cons, as we all know.
Yeah, right. Okay. So you can listen to all of that. You can listen to all of that right now on the podcast, listen on demand, stream it from our website. It's in the playback section, which is where all the aggregate of the podcast of this show, DL Debate, The Score, Chris, what other shows do we have? We've loads of other stuff. Then there's other one-off documentaries and that.
There's countless ones countless there. And you mentioned this week's podcast will be episode 248. It's quite a lot of podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 250 is a milestone,
yeah.
I think. Yeah. What was going to say to you? When are Donegal playing Saturday, is it?
This weekend they are playing...
Is it Saturday or Sunday? It's Saturday. It must be Saturday, doesn't it?
Must be.
No, it's not. It's Sunday because we have to get back from a school day. So I'm thinking, what's the crack?
You threw me last week with this because we mentioned this last week. Just, and I thought, no.
So, that's the venue. So anyway, listen, it'll be live on Sunday at some point as well to listen to. But it's
in Roscommon,
right?
Yeah.
Now.
So and
that
is
Sunday.
It's going to be a sellout. It's going to be a sellout.
Sunday at 4. Yeah. It's only 2,700 seats in Hyde Park.
Yes, and there's been a bit of...
There's a lot of people would struggle to stand for the 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, and if there's a warm-up game, curtain raiser, you know, 270 seats is nothing. Also, it's miles from here.
Yeah, not the most neutral of neutral venues.
It really is. In fact, you know what, I was going to have a rant, but Damien Dowd's had a rant on it last Friday, and you can see the clip on it, and it's tied into how we're treated more generally, and it's got tens of thousands, 30,000, 40,000 views. Right, anyway, Chris, we digress from sport to business, but that's life, isn't it? Thanks for coming in. Anything else you want to add? What about if someone wants to contact you?
Well, they can contact me by email. The best way, that's Business Matters at HighlandRadio.com. Just one other thing, Greg. Yeah, interesting to note, there was a survey out today from the Bank of Ireland just about credit card expenditure. Now, it's up 6.5% year on year. On the surface of things, people think, well, that sounds like the economy's going well. But the jury are out on this one because are a lot of people under pressure, maybe paying rent, they've got extra things. Are they spending money on their credit card?
I'm glad you mentioned it because I don't believe it's exclusively credit cards.
Yes.
It's not, is it?
There's a lot of debt.
Card. Yeah. But I also heard an expert, Chris, and this is what I do. I spend far too much time listening and reading what experts say. But apparently, compared to the likes of the United States or Britain, that we have actually quite a low rate of borrowing. In other words, that a lot of our spend is coming from, we've got an awful lot of savings in this country. Now, I'm not sure who has them, right? But we've an awful lot of savings. See, in Britain and America, when they see increases in spending, it's often actually through borrowing. I'm not saying we're not borrowing because you're talking of figures relating to that, but the majority of our spending, I believe, is money that we have. But we've got this massive divide in this country and county where we have the very, very rich, we have the doing okay, we've got the working poor, and then we've got those amongst them with the 105 children in prolonged poverty who have very little at all.
Yeah, and that the amount on deposit, I think there are 170 billion or something. There's a lot. Yeah, and the interest rates that most people are getting on that is extremely low.
Right,
so
okay.
I'll be... You won't be in the crowd.
It's 9,000 seats in Hyde Park. I Googled this because I was interested in it, and I thought it was 2,700.
Sounds a lot.
Right, 9,000 seats in King, Hyde Park. Not all are covered.
It's King and Moffat Hyde Park, by the way.
Oh. Maybe on about Hyde Park in London. Right.
So Sunday, 4 o'clock, you will be there or not?
Oh, no. I'm going to be in my armchair. I'm going to have Brendan and Brendan Devaney and Oisin Kelly, who are my new favourite twosome. I'm going to have them on the smart speaker, and I'm going to watch it on the telly, and I am going to be, as soon as the game's over, sat still on my couch and not stuck in traffic trying to get back. But I'm not a real fan. People might argue. I must go. Bye, Chris.
Bye, Greg.
Hopefully you can hear me, Councillor Patrick McGowan. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, unfortunately, another collision on the Kilross Road to Stranorlar. We can't say we haven't been talking about this, Patrick. You've warned about it. We've tried to highlight it on this show. It is a dangerous stretch, and what's it going to take?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I thought we were going to make some progress a few years ago. We were told by the local TIA office, as you know, there's a National Roads Authority office in Donegal Town, and there's some are based in Lifford as well. And in fairness, they have been lobbying for this job for a long, long time. A couple of years ago, we were told that they were carrying out a review and that they would look at Gill Hospital. Unfortunately, what they came back with was they just put on a they cut out one of the lanes coming down from Lerry County. This is where people were actually jumping the queue, pretending they were going to Convey. In actual fact, they were doing U-turns and coming back, and they were causing a lot of frustration with drivers and that and road rage. But that's all they done. Now, as I say, I don't blame the local National Roads Design Office here and the council, because I know they've been very actively lobbying for that for many a year. But I think at this stage, everybody's nearly given up, because the last time we asked, they just said no.
What is the solution? Is it lights? Is it a roundabout? I mean, you know, I think a roundabout would be very useful there, because yeah, there is also huge traffic delays there. You know, and roundabouts lets traffic move as well. And you know, we saw a situation, say, for instance, down in Lahey, whereby calls for a roundabout came far later than that for Kilross Junction. That seems to be progressing, whilst Kilross is left on the back burner. Last word to you, Councillor.
Yeah, well, look, you're 100% right there. But I think what they're saying is they keep throwing this into the mix. It's the bypass. This is all going to be bypassed. So they don't want to be investing these kind of couple hundred thousand. But you're right. We put many, 10, 15 years ago, we looked to get a roundabout in McLeay's Corner. The main issue against that was they said they didn't have the room. They'd have to take out buildings. The difference in Kilross, they have loads of room. Yeah. That, you know, they can put a yellow circle in the middle of the road and do it for maybe €100. But obviously them, it's not that expensive. But they've thrown up all sorts of objections, and they just, even the local council offices here are making no headway, and they just don't seem to want
right.
to do it.
But we'll make inquiries.
Yesterday might bring some good before somebody is killed.
Maybe. We'd hope so, yeah. But unfortunately, you know, it's not always the case. Thanks. That's Councillor Patrick McGowan. That's the 9 till noon show for Wednesday. Have a fantastic Wednesday. The sun's going to put its hat on and come out to play a little later on, so hopefully maybe you can get out and get some vitamin D and some fresh air. And we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.